everyone, and welcome to episode 551 of the MTG Old Fish Podcast. I'm Seth, probably better known as Saffron Olive, and we have the full crew here this week, kicking things off with the owner of MTG Old Fish, Richard. How are things this fine Monday, Richard?
Good morning, Seth. It's having a pretty crappy week due to reasons. But I top 64'd my One Piece regional with Treasure Cup. So
congrats.
Winning at children's card games fixes everything,
yes,
right?
All is right in the world, yes.
Grim. You've done it again, right? Because you got second before, like eighth or something?
No, 32nd. I haven't topped eight. I've top 64'd a bunch of times. Top eight is the prize, I think. Especially since there's this upcoming, like, Serial Nami. But anyway... we gotta get sweaty. But you know, the ironic thing is whenever I get sweaty, like, I never get to play. And then whenever, like, I'm doing random stuff, like playing like Magic, like Final Fantasy draft stuff, that I top One Piece. It's like kind of hilarious.
The less
I, like,
focused
really
you are, the better
I'm like,
you
oh,
do.
I can't play this weekend, or oh, you know, 0-3 drop, right? So
Magic has trained you.
Of course, we got another ghost in Krim. Good morning, Krim. What's going on?
Oh, yeah, dude. Spider-Man spoilers, baby. So that's what's going on. I've been jumping up and down, spin kicking in my room. Dude, I am flying right now.
The it biggest is Spider-Man hater.
I know,
the
it's
biggest
so funny.
Spider-Man hater, yes. And he's so
what up?
Excited wearing his Venom shirt.
Again? Perfect for a Spider-Man hater, because I've always loved his villains. His villains are some of the coolest. Unfortunately, I have to see Peter Parker specifically. Miles Morales is fine.
What about all the other Spider-Mans?
Oh, it's just Peter Parker. It's just Peter Parker.
Peter Parker.
I probably should ask this question, because I'm going to be doing spoiler videos this week for Spider-Man. Do more than one people turn into Spider-Man? I guess I don't know the lore of Spider-Man. Are there multiple people that end up becoming Spider-Man now in Spider-Man lore, or is it just Peter Parker?
That's where the beauty of the Spider-Man universe comes in, where there is a bunch of different Spider-Men and Spider-People from different timelines. And
interesting.
So, yeah.
Spider-People. Seth, you remember we went to Bloomburrow and then we found Jace the Mind Sculptor, but he was a fox?
Oh, yeah, fox. Was, yeah. Yeah.
You know, different universes, different things get bitten by spiders, apparently. Apparently spiders is the one thing that unites all multiverses together.
Radioactive spiders, okay, and that determines, like, you know, hey, well, is this fate or that I got bit by the spider? Who knows?
I mean,
was I always meant to be Spider-Man?
There's some cloning going on as well. You know, we have, like, I don't know, how many years of Spider-Man? Like, 80 years?
That's got to be a lot, yeah. Spider-Man's been around forever.
Like, in middle school for me, there was, like, 700 of mainline issue. Like, mainline series.
Jeez.
That's not counting all the spinoffs.
That's
they
even
had a lot of time
podcast
to make up convoluted plots, okay? They had to keep going.
Anyway, Spider-Man is one of our big topics today. We really have two big topics. So one is Spider-Man spoilers, which we're going to get to in the second half of the podcast today. We're going to kick things off, though, today, talking a bit about Spotlight Series Planetary Rotation in Orlando and what is going on in the standard format at the moment, because we've kind of been waiting for this event. This is the big open event, like a Grand Prix, where we could really see what Paper Standard is about, and now we have the results. But before we end all that, we got a sponsor today in Card Conduit. And Card Conduit's the easiest way to sell your Magic cards. If you ever get tired of the hassles a buy listing, you can skip them with Card Conduit. You can use your curated service where you send in as many cards as you want with a buy list value of a dollar or more and pay just a 5% service fee. And if you want to do a bit of work, you can use their sorted service where you list and sort your cards in advance and pay just a 2% fee. Either way, you're going to get a detailed report with the results and a fast payment once your order is processed. And you can even get another 10% off by heading over to cardconduit.com/mtggoldfish. Card Conduit, it's the easiest way to sell your Magic cards. So thank you to Card Conduit for supporting the show. And let's talk some Magic, and let's start with this Spotlight Series event. So to set the stage for this event, we had rotation about a month ago now, almost exactly a month ago now, and almost immediately after rotation, we saw the Izzet Cauldron deck with Vivi, Agatha, Soul Cauldron, kind of rise to the top of the format, and it's put up some really killer results on Magic Online in smaller tournaments like Nerd Trade, Games, events, and so forth. But I have been waiting for this Spotlight Series event because this is like an old GP where just anyone can go, anyone can play, and I figured this would be the event that would really tell us what Standard was about. So I was kind of withholding my judgment on the format until we got to this event. Richard, what happened at Spotlight Series Planetary Rotation in Orlando?
Vivi? So there's two interesting storylines out of this. So Vivi was only 30% of the field day one. So it looked like almost reasonable, right? Like in some of our balanced standards, that's what it would look like. But by day two, I think it was like 50%.
Yeah, 54.
And then by the time you made it to Top Cut, it was 75%. And it was just all VVs and like some mono red players. And then the mono red players, of course, faced each other in the bracket. So that's story one, right? So VV, almost reasonable on day one. But as the tournament progressed, it's clear that everyone else was just coping, right? You should have brought VV. They didn't solve anything really except mono red players. Mono red players' conversions actually went up for day two. And then the other part was attendance. So this is supposed to be a Grand Prix style event. We had like 700 people. The last one we had was double, 1,500.
Yeah, almost 1,500.
Yeah. And I think part of the problem, this is price. So Vivi is an extremely expensive deck. You're talking about like $800+. So many people just can't afford it or don't want to afford it. And then the other thing is the looming bans, right? When you have looming bans, people do not play the format, right? Because what is the point? It's all going to change, right? And then if you want to play the format, you need to fork over $800, right? Now, you would think that this doesn't matter because given this is like a very sweaty event, but apparently it matters, right? Like usually the tournament grinders ignore all this noise about bannings and price and all of that, but attendance is way down.
It's super funny. The attendance thing, I think, might actually be the most worrying aspect of this, especially from Wizards' perspective. Like, we've seen Wizards tough it out through some rough metagames where they're just like, hey, we're not doing a ban announcement for another few months. Y'all are going to have to deal with it. They did it during Nadu. They did it with a Heartfire hero in the mono red decks and Monstrous Rage. So that's not uncommon for Wizards. But thinking back on what has made Wizards take action and change things, it's drops in attendance. I actually found this old quote from Aaron Forsythe during the Callblade bannings, where he basically said, when people stop playing the game, we have to do something about it. Like, that's the worst thing that can happen to us, is people just stop playing our game. And I know that's 15 years ago, but I think that still matters. And yes, it's true that there could be other reasons that attendance is down so drastically. It's a holiday weekend. People are going back to school. It's in Florida, and maybe people don't want to go to Florida. Like, there's a bunch of, like, other reasons that could
Florida
be
Florida getting
of it.
Strays.
I believe that last one.
But I've been hearing other reports from people. There was someone on Reddit a day or two ago that was like, hey, I got back into Magic like a year ago. I was going to my store championship to play Standard. I was super hyped. And then I was the only one that showed up. So they gave me the promos and I won by default. And I didn't want to win by default. I wanted to actually play Magic. And I've heard LGSs being like, well, we've had to cancel our RCQs because we just don't have enough attendance to play Standard. So when you add that on top of this, I think that we actually have a, in paper in specific, I think Arena is still doing well, but I think in paper in specific, we do have an attendance problem with Standard. Do you think that's just the meta? Is it the cost of the decks? Is it the speed at which things moving? Is it that everyone's just playing Commander now? Like, what's going on with Standard? Why aren't people playing this format in paper?
I think you kind of talked a little bit about, like, kind of touched a little bit of everything, right? Like, the fact here is that, you know, Commander is Magic. It's in Florida. And then on top of that, okay, I don't know where it was actually, but there is a lot of things at play here. And maybe people, I think some people don't like, or a good amount of people don't like Vivi. Although I don't know why. I love Baby Boy. I don't know what Aaron was talking about. I had the time of my life playing Cobblade. So, I'm desensitized to this. But yeah, I'm very curious. So, like, Richard, what do you think?
I'll give you guys a little story. I bought a Standard deck. Remember I told you guys I bought a Standard deck? It's been I don't know what it's been, like 6 weeks. Haven't played it once. I have begged my LGS to hold a standard event. I'm like, when's standard showdown happening? When's store champs going? And they're like, never. No one is going to show up, right? It'll be you and this other person there. You guys can go play right now.
Right? Go have your own standard champs.
Finals immediately?
like that's... I'm like, really? Like, really? Right? I'm like, okay, we gotta wait for Spider-Man, and when the promos come out, people will come. But, like, nobody plays. And I like a schmuck, bring my standard deck every week when I go play One Piece, because, you know, magic happens after. There might be standard players. Like, I've never been able to use it whatsoever. Worst $200 investment of my life. But it's just, like, bad. Like, I don't know why you would play it, right? Like, you have to be a tournament grinder to play it, and even tournament grinders are fed up with this. Like, as a normal person, how do you feel bringing your, like, non-tier one deck and getting slammed by Vivi? How do you feel about bringing your tier one deck that's not Vivi, which doesn't exist, by the way? There's only one tier one deck. It's Vivi, right? And getting slammed anyway, right? Like, you know, you bring Dimir Midrange, you're like, oh, yo, this super expensive deck that's supposed to be, like, competitive is getting slammed, right? And you could invest the time to figure out and try to beat it, but then you see the results, you're like, is it even worth it, right? And then should I even bother picking up Vivi to play in my, like, eight-person standard FNM, you know? Like, there's just, like, really no incentive to get any of this done. And part of it is us, right? Every week we go on, we're like, wow, standard sucks, guys. And, like, the whole narrative is standard sucks. And you're like, why would I partake in this thing that standard sucks? You know what I mean? It's like, it needs to be good. And then we need to hype it up. And, like, everyone will be hype. Everyone will go play, right? But, like, how can we sit here and hype this up? You know, like it's like so bad, right? It's not like that. It's expensive, right?
Yeah, it's not a great meta. It's an incredibly expensive meta.
We had rotation, okay. We had rotation, okay. So supposed to be fresh format. Two new sets come out. One card is being played, Vivi. You know, and like maybe some random removal here or there, but. Where are my spacecraft, you know? Where's my, I don't know, summon whatever majigs or whatever? Where's my landfall chocobos? Where's anything, right? Like, there's just no hype, right? We just put our cards in our binder and go play Commander, right?
Yeah. I wonder, man, there's so much that goes into this. I wonder if part of that, too, is, like, a product of us being in a three-year standard now where just so many sets are legal. I remember when they first announced that, one of my big worries was, I think in bigger formats, the best cards rise to the top. I remember Wizards selling that change as, oh, it's going to make standard more diverse. You're going to have more cards, so it's going to lead to more diversity because you have more options. And I was like, I don't think that's how it works in practice. When I look at older formats, the best cards rise to the top, and you just have even more cards that are unplayable because they can't compete with the best cards. And I feel like that's kind of what we're seeing happening here. I know one of the numbers that jumped off the page to me at the meta from the Spotlight series wasn't just, is it Calderon killing it and Mono Red doing well? Those are the two stories. The other story I saw is on day one, 23% of people, 154 players, were on other decks. So things outside of like the top 15 or whatever, playing their homebrews, playing their cool stuff. 7 of those people made day two, 4%. Like you just got smacked. If you were not playing Calderon or Mono Red, you might have not even shown up for the tournament. There was no point in it because you just cannot compete with the good decks in the format. And that's pretty concerning because I remember we talked a while ago, well, maybe things will just change and people will kind of play the fun decks and standard will get more casual. But at least on the tournament level, that doesn't seem to be happening. Like you play your brews and you're just going to get absolutely demolished. So, is it fair to say that we need bannings again? Are we at that? I was holding off my judgment of calling for bannings until we got to this event. Looking at these numbers, it's hard for me to see how you don't ban Calderon or Vivi, like one of those cards. But I don't know. What do you guys think? Is there any way we get out of this without bannings?
I think if you're going to ban something is what I feel like the overall community wants. I personally want I want the Calderon banned.
Interesting.
Yes, because I am
a Vivi
fanboy. But on top of that, I do think that Calderon is a card that I've said over and over is a very strong card, a busted card even. It just needs the right abilities. And I think that that is more of a powerhouse than like this cheap 2-mana artifact that also is a like card like Graveyard Hate, numerous like applications. I think that card is the more powerful card
and what makes the deck tick, right? Vivi, if as a loan, just a threat, a three drop, you play it, you can answer it and be done with it.
Interesting. I'm kind of...
It's
strong,
by the way. I'm not saying Vivi sucks.
I feel like, so I think the other side of that conversation would be, well, Cauldron was in Standard for 2 years before Vivi came along. And yeah, it was like part of a second tier root stack or whatever, but it wasn't doing anything, you know, super degenerate. And then we got Vivi, and all of a sudden it's the most broken thing ever. So I'm a little worried that if you just ban Cauldron, that we might be going through this same conversation in another 2 months because Vivi's actually still too good in Prowess or some other shell. I'm just very scared of that card. I think the safest path would be to just ban both of them. I agree, though, that I think it's more likely that Wizards ban Soul Cauldron, in part because it's an older card, and in part because it's the in-universe card, and that just probably makes it easier because you're not, like, potentially angering your partners who are going to be like, why would I give you my IP if you're just going to ban my most iconic characters 2 months after they see print? Like, why would I partner with you? So I think that Cauldron would be the more likely banning, but what do you think, Richard? Are we going to get a ban, and what would you ban?
I think it's so cooked you do nothing. I
think, just let it go.
Like, okay, trust has been broken. It doesn't matter if they ban anything because what's going to happen is we're just going to play Dimir midrange and it'll be the same old boring crap, right? Like, what really needed to happen was that Edge of Eternities brought a new archetype featuring whatever mechanic they wanted to feature. Could have been warp, could have been, you know, stationing or whatever, right? Into the meta as a tier one contender. Final Fantasy need to do that. Every new standard set should bring a deck into the forefront featuring its mechanics, not like a single card. Like, you know, if you look at it, like, yes, Vivi is a Final Fantasy card, it's running the tables, but it's like a singular card, right? And it's not the summon mechanic, it's not the landfall mechanic, it's not any of those. So I think we need more systematic changes than just banning whatever. And then letting, like, Dimir midrange go to the top. You ban that, then Overlords goes to the top. Whatever, right? It's like the same whatever deck we've seen forever. So just leave it as is. It's already cooked, I guess. Like, just ignore it. And then try to fix something, like, 1 to 2 years out, right? One Spider-Man 3 comes out. There should be a deck from Spider-Man that's a meta contender, right? When Lorwyn comes out, there should be a Lorwyn deck, right? And I don't mean the Crim special of, like, one removal card from Lorwyn hits my 75, right? I mean, like, actually featuring
so
the mechanic flavors of that set, right? So that I remember that set even exists, right? Like, you can't tell me what, like, the Outlaws of Thunder Junction mechanic is because you've seen, like, just a handful of cards. Actually, we can because that handful of cards was broken, slick shop, show off or whatever, right? But, like,
also Marauding Mako from Aetherdrift.
It's always like singular cards from a set make an impact or none. You know what I mean? And it's not like a core set of, like, you know, here's the mechanic. The closest thing we had was Bloomburrow, ironically, right? With mice. You're like, here's a mouse package. You play three mice, right? And then, like, that's your mouse package. We need that for, like, literally every set, and that requires some kind of systematic change, not just banning something, because we ban Vivi, we ban Cauldron. Guarantee you, it's Dimir midrange versus Overlords versus Mono Red. And, like, okay, now it's balanced, but is anyone excited to play this? You know what I mean? Like, it's the same decks we've seen forever, right? So, it's like, eh.
I definitely agree that we need systemic changes. I think, like, I go back to the amount of sets and years of cards in Standard, the slower rotation, canceling, or, like, all that stuff to me, I think I point the finger towards a lot of that stuff for making things worse. I think there's just too many cards and too many powerful cards, and it's just going to keep too much out of the meta. And I think it's going to make it hard to have new sets make an impact, which I think we're seeing in practice right now, is new sets come and go, and yeah, they're getting Commander. Yeah, maybe you get a Vivi, maybe you get some removal spells, but they're not making, like, a huge shakeup or even much of a real impact on Standard. So I hope Wizards takes a hard look at the structural stuff. And my argument would be, if you're serious about revitalizing Paper Standard, I think you're just going about it backwards. Backwards. You're doing, like, the wrong things. Like, whatever plan you had 2 years ago with a revitalizing Standard by, like, slowing everything down, never banning anything, we're seeing the fruits of this now, and it's people aren't showing up to your tournaments. The meta's constantly broken. Like, it's not working, so why not try something different? Because the path that we're going down right now is definitely not becoming productive in Standard. But to take a more positive glimpse on this before we go to Spider-Man, is there any chance, Krim, that Mono Red Aggro is actually the solution to this problem. Because if you look at this tournament, obviously by every metric other than who won the tournament, is it Cauldron crushed it? Like, how many decks made it to the top 8, the top 32, and to day 2? But Mono Red Aggro won the tournament. It played against a lot of is it Cauldron decks along the way. Brennan Roy, who actually won it, played against is it Cauldron, I don't know, 9 times, 10 times, just doing a quick count of the rounds that they played through.
I think it was 11-2 at the end of the day.
In a miserable bracket.
Ended up winning the entire thing. So do you think this mono red deck, Krim, does this actually be is it Cauldron, or is it just feasting on the way that Cauldron decks happen to be built this weekend?
I mean, I think that mono red is very good into is it Cauldron. The problem is all the other decks. Right.
Yeah.
I don't know where it I will say that the one thing that has made it really strong, because I made a video a couple weeks back, and it was that mono red had to go a little bit bigger. And I was right. Right. Because I mean, look at that. Nova Hellkite, all of the big dragons that they included just make it so strong.
And it's playing for the Crim Special Razorkin Needlehead to shut down the Cauldron decks from trying to pop off and draw the cards with Winter Moon Stories and all that stuff.
Yeah, I love seeing that. And I think it is naturally just going to like feast on the... First off, the meta has just overall not respected red. I won't lie to you.
Yes.
I told you I did a Store Champs. Well, let me tell you, I had like almost zero mono red hate on my sideboard. So nobody is out there respecting red, and that's when red does the best, right? So now mono red is a known quantity. I'm curious to see how it goes moving forward, but I do think that going bigger was the right play. The Razorkin Needlehead, I didn't play a full four of like a couple of weeks back when I made my video, but I did play like 2 or 3 just because I love the card. And then on top of that, Nova Hellkite just seems like an all-star, right? And now we're seeing it prove its like show its worth in the format.
What do you think, Richard? Is red the answer to this?
I mean, maybe, but like, everyone has been adjusting for Vivi like the whole time. Now Vivi gets to adjust for mono red. And when the core of your deck is so powerful, it has winning matchups by default, you have a lot of flex options to really get in there and like tighten the screws on mono red. So I don't expect mono red to actually be an answer, but like maybe Vivi has respected enough such that the other matchups get bad enough that, you know, there's some kind of meta. But like I don't think so, but we'll see.
Yeah.
Right? Like we'll see.
I'm a little sus that red is actually the long-term answer. I think it was the best answer for this weekend, but if you actually dig into the deck list a little bit, one of the things that happened this weekend, so like 2 weeks ago, blue-white control was like the hot tech for trying to beat Vivi, and everyone was like, oh, maybe control is the answer because it did well. It was like the one deck to make the top 8 at a Nerd Rage Games or something that wasn't Vivi. So people were like, oh, maybe control's the answer. You play out like control cards, you get the sweepers, you counter their stuff, you play a Gnolls in the main deck to deal with Egg of the Soul Cauldrons. So that was the hype. So all the Cauldron players were like, oh, if control's going to try to be the foil to us, we're going to cut back on our cheap removal and we'll start playing a bunch of Quantum Riddlers. So now they're playing all these big Sphinxes to draw a bunch of cards, but they pretty much cut their torch the towers. If you look at these deck lists, they're like super light on cheap removal and went to be like, I'm going to play these big things for control. So I think red was really good this weekend because it took advantage of that. I think if the Cauldron decks are like, oh, we got to beat red, then they trim back on like the Riddlers and start playing all the torch the towers again. And that probably is going to make the matchup a lot trickier for the Razorkin Needlehead side of things.
But then they lose the control. Rock, paper, saying, scissors.
Yeah, everything that you're saying sounds fun, right? Like, you have to make the right meta call. Like, if you want to go heavy on the removal, then you're going to lose to control. You have to play this game of rock, paper, scissors, and I really liked it. I don't know. I think the standard is really fun.
I mean, it's kind of funny. Like, I like a lot of decks and things going on in Standard, but I think at least from a competitive perspective, the format is horrible. Like, I don't think it's as bad as it is
at the
Spotlight series.
It's so
on
good.
Arena or something.
All you got to learn is the mirror and mono red, and you're good to go. You're like, this is like prime, like... I'm surprised more like old school pros aren't playing. You know what I mean? Like, you know, like the Hall of Famers stuff, because it's like... you're out of magic for a couple years. You don't really need to do it. Like, you just need to learn, like, one deck list, two deck lists, and, like, you know, you use, like, your innate magic playing abilities, right? You're not going to get, like, scammed out by some, like, random interaction you don't know because it's so small. But I'm with Krim in that if you want a top eight in event, you don't want a diverse meta. You want, like, a one-deck meta, and you don't even want, like, this random mono red in your way. You just want VV mirrors all the way, and then you just know how to beat the VV mirror, and you're good to go. So I think it's actually better for pros, but, like, the actual sweaty
Azure Beast Binder is still my best friend.
I think pros still want to have fun, though. Like, you still got to enjoy it to some extent if you're going to spend your weekend.
Is this not fun? This is the most fun you can have.
Is playing Cauldron Mirrors all weekend fun? I guess for some people, it probably is.
For a weekend, you know, where I get to just play and flex my brain power, that's all I could ask for, right? Like, that is outplaying your opponent. Oh, there's so much fun in that. And then, I don't know. I think it's just very apparent that what I consider fun is very different.
It's like chess. All the pieces do the same thing, Seth. And the only thing that's different is if you're on the play or on the draw, right? And all the pieces do the same thing, right? The exact 75 on both sides.
I'll just say, speaking of Hall of Famers, you know things are in a weird spot when Willie Adel comes out of pseudo-retirement, comes in from South America all the way to the U.S. to play a tournament and plays Mono Red, because he's kind of very known for being like a mid-range kind of player. He made 9th, though, with it, so apparently the red deck is good in Willie's hands, at least. So we did see a little bit of the Hall of Famers there, but I don't know. I'm curious what y'all think who are watching this. Like, do we do anything with Standard? Do we get bannings? Last question, then we got to move on to Spider-Man. So the next BNR scheduled is November 24th. So almost 3 months from now. What are the odds? Give me an actual percentage that something changes before that. Like, how committed do you think Wizards is to riding this out until at least November? Or, like Richard said, maybe they don't ban anything at all and they try to fix things in another way. Is there any percent chance that, like, dropping attendance and the meta and all that stuff together forces Wizards' hand to do something earlier? Or do you think it's November or later at the earliest?
What is it? It's beginning of September now, so
it's, yeah.
We're
so
talking about 2 months.
We're talking about 11
big
weeks,
event?
Basically.
What's
Wait,
the
11
next
weeks?
Next
it's end?
It's 24th of November, yeah, so like Thanksgiving time. So it's like, yeah.
Wait, that's the next big event, or that's the next window?
That's the next ban list update. There are no ban list updates until November 24th, yeah. I don't know if there's any big events that are scheduled. I think there's a Spotlight series, but it's modern. I don't think there's another like Spotlight series standard event before then. Although there might be a Pro Tour Spider-Man, maybe, or something.
I think next week we'll be talking about...
Isn't Atlanta?
You think so?
If they are going to ban something, it has to be before Atlanta, right?
When is
and
Atlanta?
That Atlanta is the end of now this month.
The end of September would be the Pro Tour, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
But then they're going to be, because that's happening. They're like, out of respect for the players, we don't want to change the metagame in the middle of their prep, so now it's got to be... after Atlanta, and then it's so close now, should we even bother? But like, attendance is just gonna bleed. No one is gonna do anything. It's just a waiting game, right? So they might as well just do it now. Who's gonna be mad at them, really? They already look dumb. Like, what could go wrong by doing this? But the Pro Tour thing, I think, could be, because they always use an excuse, right? Like, you don't want the meta changing like 2 weeks before a Pro Tour, but why not? How important is this Pro Tour compared to the entire player base?
Yeah. And I think it means you have to do it. If you're going to do it, you should do it soon, right? Because there is a Pro Tour coming up, but it's only September 1st. The Pro Tour is until the last weekend of September. If you announce something this week or like by next Monday, there would still be enough time to prepare. Personally, I think they're going to ride it out to November. I don't think they should ride it out to November. That's not what I would do, but I think that's what they will do. For some reason, they have... I mentioned this, I made a video today on the main YouTube about all of this stuff, so check that out. But they have this almost like reserve list level of devotion to avoiding standard bannings. I've never seen WotC. They're so known for just like changing course and jumping here for there, but I will give them credit, even though I don't really like it. But they have really stuck to this, we don't want to ban cards in standard thing ever since they announced it, which I guess in some ways is kind of impressive. So I'm hoping they do something sooner. I'm expecting to wait till November. But what I really want out of this is them to not just announce a banning, but announce they're going to have some sort of more flexible, like, ban schedule. Just, like, the fact that the ban list window is 3 months away is just a really crazy way to run your game in 2025. Like, to tie your own hands by not having the option to do something if you need to just seems like such a weird... I know they're trying to give players confidence or whatever, but apparently that's not working if no one's showing up to play your game.
Zero confidence. What is it really? We don't believe them for a second. Right? What is the point of adhering to the schedule? We don't believe they're going to do it. We don't think they should even do it. Like, what is the point? Where is consumer confidence being upheld here?
Yeah, I don't really see it. But anyway, that's what's going on in Standard. That's all the VV stuff. That's the Spotlight series. Let's move on and talk about the newest Magic set. We're in the middle of spoiler season for Spider-Man, and we have some pretty cool cards to talk about. But before we get to the cards, Richard, you can guide us through. I gotta know, Richard, what do you think of the special treatments? Because I know when it comes to these sets, you're always looking for the special treatments. What tier would you say the Spider-Man treatments are? Are they living up to expectations?
They have gone, like, beyond expectations. I actually am shocked. I thought they did a good job on Final Fantasy. Looking back, Final Fantasy looks so bad. like Spider-Man.
Don't
blew this
say
out of the
that
water.
Online.
Like, I know,
that.
Right? I am like the greatest Final Fantasy lover, but you're like, you know, the special treatments. Like, how well were they done? Look at Spider-Man. Look how much love and care were put into them. Look how the special treatments match the universe. Avatar doesn't match up to it either, right? So I'm like, I don't know what's going on, but like, the people at WotC love Spider-Man. They're giving it... I expected one special treatment, right? They have, like, produced multiple special treatments, secret lairs that continue to blow my mind, Bugle. Right? The Daily Bugle ones. So good. You want to know, like, just look at the art cards from Final Fantasy. Look at the value they maintain. So these things are going to go for crazy amounts. And I know I shared with... I started actually digging. I'm like, wait, why don't I just buy Marvel cards? You know, like, when I was a kid, I used to collect Marvel metal and stuff like that. So I'm like, yeah, let's take a look. And then I shared with you guys. It's like, yeah, they're like $600 a box, $800 a box.
Really?
Like, just literally.
I didn't know these were still worth anything.
Wow.
They're just like cards, right? They're just like, you know,
yeah,
like, you know, old school trading cards. And if that's the value they're holding... Imagine if they're like playable in Magic, right? So these alt arts are gonna go nuts. But I don't know. Don't listen to me. According to Reddit, like, Spider-Man sucks, no one will buy it. But I personally hope they're cheap so I can pick them up. But looking just at like the trading card, not the trading card, what do you call the collectible card market? Like, people just buy random Marvel cards and they're super expensive. And like, that's it. All they have is just like the name and some stats or whatever on them, right?
And
but like
the
these,
art is
these.
Really
treatments
good.
Rival like, those, right? Like,
yeah, I was blown away because I don't know Spider-Man, don't care about Spider-Man, and even I think like the Arachnogenesis and some of those like Marvel bonus sheet cards, they just look so cool. Oh. Like, they just look so cool, and I don't even care
Path
about Spider-Man.
To Exile.
So,
oh my god.
Yeah.
Okay. there's something that's really nice about this, and like Richard had mentioned, the Final Fantasy set, I liked, but the bonus sheet cards. Some of the cards felt really random and didn't make any sense. Like, why was this Magic card, right? It seems like the bonus sheet for this set makes more sense. Like, Arachnogenesis being, like, example, the Todd McFarlane cover and Path to Exile being the Kingpin issue, right? So the reason, and what becomes of Peter Parker during that, right? So, obviously, I think this is just more flavorfully sound when it comes to the bonus sheet as well. And also, yes, it looks phenomenal. Like, oh my god.
Now that they removed them mostly from Play Boosters, they made them good. Anyway, they do look so good, and I don't even care about Spider-Man, but we got some spoiler cards. Richard, why don't you guide us through a few of these spoiler cards? Is there anything in this set that's going to actually shake up Standard? I'm curious.
I don't know. Should I be optimistic? Everyone always dogs me for saying, like, oh, everything's unplayable. I'm like, what do you want? That's the actual precedent, right? Like, everything is unplayable.
You're not wrong, yeah.
I'm not actually wrong, right? But, okay. Let's start it easy with the Commander card, okay? Commander's less controversial, okay? Rent is due. How do we feel about Rent is due? A single white, so one mana enchantment. At the beginning of your end step, you may tap two untapped creatures and or treasures you control. If you do, draw a card. Otherwise, sacrifice this enchantment. I have it on record that Tomer says this is the most broken Phyrexian arena. is this good? Is this a good card in Commander? Or I don't know, is this standard playable in any way?
I actually think this could even be good outside of Commander. So I think it's got to be in a specific deck, right? You need creatures you don't mind tapping, or even better, a bunch of treasures on the battlefield. But if you are that deck, this is kind of a one-mana Phyrexian arena. So if I'm playing like a token deck or a treasure deck in Commander, I think I would run this pretty much every time. It's only a single mana. And one of the things I learned from Esper Sentinel is when a card's one mana, you don't really have to draw that many cards off of it to make it worth it. Like, if this ends up drawing you three cards and then gets sacked because someone rasped the board and you don't have anything left, that was Ancestral Recall. It was a one mana draw of three. Sure, split up across a couple turns, but even that's still more than worth it. I can even almost imagine, like, the Ocelot Pride deck, like the energy deck in Modern that's just so good at spewing out 1/1s, playing this as like a sideboard card is only one mana, and then you have all these cat tokens and if you're drawing a card. So I actually think this card only goes in some decks, but in those decks, I think it's very good in Commander and in some 60-card formats.
Survival cards, like from Duskmourn, will definitely love this because there's so many turns in Standard where maybe something has prevented you from swinging with it, right? Like whatever the 2-drop in white is, Reluctant Role Model. Well, now you can just tap it at the end of your turn, and maybe you don't get the survival effect of Reluctant Role Model, but the main thing here is, you know, all the Vigilant cards and all these other things that are running around right now. I think this card is just it's like very cheap and very, very efficient at what it does. And Commander, it'll pop off.
The flavor is also kind of perfect for having to pay your rent. They did kind of nail it flavor-wise.
I clarified that I could talk about the fact that I could say that I've done consulting work on this set, and this is a card that just made me laugh. This is a fun card.
It's unplayable trash, unfortunately. I don't know why you guys are so high on it. Like, oh my goodness.
What?
Yeah, okay. You need to have popped off. You have to have two creatures that you don't, you know, you don't want to block with, you don't want to attack with. And then you get to a one card a turn draw. And if for whatever reason any of these conditions are not met, this thing gets sacrificed. Like, if I have accomplished my next goal, yeah. I hope to draw more than one card a turn. You know what I mean? Like, it's so bad, right? Like, think of all the times where your opponent just removes your board and then you just play it. Oh, I can't even play it. I can't even use my mana this turn to play this and do nothing. I actually have to just hold it in my hand and wait. Like, if you didn't have to sack it, I think it might be playable. But you have to sack it.
Wait. So what you're saying is you want a one mana card advantage engine that is.
Like, think of Minas Tirith. Is it Minas Tirith?
Yeah.
That's the land. What's the two mana one? Dawn of New Age or whatever. The two mana one, that's Phyrexian Arena, that you actually draw an end step and then you have to have creatures on the board. Like, that thing is just like mid, right? But that thing, like, doesn't require as much setup as this. You know what I mean? Like, I feel if you're already flooding the board like this, your payoff should be much greater, right, than whatever this thing is giving you. So, and then there's many times where this will do literally nothing. So I don't like this at all.
I'm gonna try it, but I guess we'll see.
Rent is due. Okay, Gwenom, Remorseless. Oh no, spoilers. I didn't know she got venomized at some point. 5 mana, 4/4. Legendary creature, symbiote spider hero, death touch, lifelink. When Gwenom attacks until end of turn, you may look at the top card of your library anytime, and you may play cards from the top of your library. If you cast a spell this way, pay life equal to its mana value rather than pay its mana cost.
It's both of Citadel on a body if it attacks, essentially.
Which, but it has to attack.
It does have to attack, which makes me very skeptical of this card in Standard, although maybe the lifelink and death touch matter. Like, that is nice. I am a little sus of it in Standard. I think in Commander, this card's kind of busted, though. Like, Bolas of Citadel, already a game changer. This is a Bolas of Citadel. Main play in the command zone, throw a Lightning Greaves on it, a Boots on it or something, so it has haste and attack right away. Plus, there's a lot of combos for Bolas of Citadel. All the Sensei's Divining top stuff. So if you have
Sensei's
those combos
Divining
going...
Stuff.
Yeah, Sensei's Divining stuff. Sensei's Divining top stuff. But if you have that going on, and you already have one of your combo pieces in the command zone, seems kind of strong. Plus, I love Bolas of Citadel. It's just super fun. So I like this card, but I don't really expect it to be that good in Standard.
Doesn't have any, like, protection.
Yeah.
Or outside of the Death Touch, but, like, that doesn't stop it from just getting
no
killed
ward
when it
or
comes
anything.
Down. Yeah, no ward. Which for some are like, thank God. But I personally... Yeah, like, this is a cool card. It's very Commander. Very, very much so, like, think of it like the Magus of a Bolas of Citadel or something like that. I don't know. But the main thing here is it's a lot of fun if you get to swing with it. And this is just going to be, like, a Commander All-Star.
Yeah. I mean, it's worse than Citadel because you have to do it post-combat, so you don't get a combat. And then you don't get the alt-win con of sacking 10 things or whatever. Dies to Doomblade. Yes, I know it's black, you know, dies to any spot removal without doing anything before leaving. I could see some kind of meta where you sneak this in and it does something, like, you know, removal light meta or like red burn meta where it actually lives. But
is this Baneslayer?
I mean, I don't know what I would do. But it's Lifelink. It's Lifelink.
The Lifelink is nice. Although we have Elegy
Acolyte. But 5 mana 4/4 does nothing. ETB is like extremely bad, but. But Shieldred, remember Shieldred? Shieldred also does nothing ETB. Difference is when you dig with Shieldred, you die. This one, you can still dig for your answer and remove it before any damage is done. So I'm going to go with this does nothing.
And Shieldred never had to attack. Like this, to do it, you actually have to put it into combat, and that's going to be tricky. I got to ask you guys about a card before we carry on, because I'm just curious if I'm missing on this one. Behold the Sinister Six. It's a 7-mana mythic sorcery that says return up to 6 creature cards with different names from your graveyard to the battlefield. So is this card playable in Commander? So I'm assuming, like, I'm building against Zod's deck in Standard, but it's not going to be a Standard staple or something, I don't think. But I'm curious in Commander, you have, like, Living Death at 5 mana, which kind of wraths and then gives everyone their creatures back. If you get up to 9 mana, you have just randomly everything in Rise of the Dark Realms. At 7 mana, you got Breach the Multiverse, which you mill everyone and randomly from each player's graveyard. Where does this card fit in the context of, like, Commander? Is this card even worth playing in a reanimator deck in Commander? How does it compare to those other cards?
I mean, so Breach of the Multiverse, you get 4 bodies. It's random, right? Because it's whatever is in people's yards. This you can control a lot more if you're like a self-mill. And if you're planning on reanimating, getting back 6 creatures of your choice is pretty sweet. And it's the Sinister Six. It's got Mysterio in it. And look at that. Look at Doc Ock in the background. It's even got Kraven. Ah, that's so sick.
Wait, I only see 5, though. I see Sandman, what? Mysterio, Kraven, Electro.
Oh, I think
Doc
way
Ock.
In the back, there's
Electro's
like a little
in the back.
One way in the back.
You have Doc Ock. You have Kraven. You have Mysterio. You have Sandman. And then you also have the Vulture. You have the Vulture.
I don't see Vulture. Where's Vulture? Oh, there. I see Vulture.
He's
now.
Like,
okay. But you guys smoking. This card sucks. Like, okay, if you're a reanimator deck, you don't need 6 cards. Okay? You don't need 6 cards if you're a reanimator deck. Okay? You need, like, 1 or 2 and you win the game. Right? And so if you want to mass reanimate and you're just having random things, like, Breach the Multiverse, I think, is, like, 1,000,000 times better. Now, having said that, you put this in your deck, it'll probably still do the thing. It'll probably still win. You know what I mean? Like, it's good enough. Right, but if you're trying to be optimal sweaty, I think the other options, I think, like, especially like Living Death, are much better, because the difference is you're not just getting random thing, like you're not getting like 6 Spirited Companions back. You don't care about that, right? You're actually just getting your bomb back. You only need 1 of them, right? And you're gonna win the game. So actually, the best card is reanimate 1 mana, right?
Yeah.
But if you wanted like something like this, I would actually go with Breach the Multiverse, Living Death, Rise of the Dark Realms. But if you put this in your deck, you'll still win, and it's still crazy. So if you like the flavor and you like the art, like, go for it.
That's That's basically exactly where I landed. Like, I don't think it's the best version of this effect, but it's probably still good enough. So if you want to play it, go for it. But I would probably breach the multiverse too if I had to choose like only one for my deck. Plus in Commander, if you're playing like a casual reanimator deck, you probably just play both of them if you want to. Like, there's no reason you can't.
Yeah, you just want redundancy anyways. And like, you could also just yell behold before you do anything.
Behold the multiverse. Okay. you know what a fun game would be? Like, what is the Magic Arena name of all these cards?
Oh yeah, we don't know.
Behold the Savage Six. What do you look also, out? The Savage Six.
Also, Mr. Consultant there. Could this card not have cost 6 mana just to make it line up with the name? Behold the Sinister Six cost 7 mana. Would it be too OP, do you think? Maybe reanimate 6 for 6 mana would just be too strong. But that was the first thing I thought is, man, it would have such nice symmetry if it was 6 mana.
I mean, yeah, like that'd be very strong, right?
But that
like
would probably be. Yeah. That might be a little much.
I too would like very, very busted cards.
All right. Well, let's continue on with our Sinister Six. We have Electro Assaulting Battery. 1 red, legendary creature, human villain, 2/3, flying. You don't lose unspent red mana as steps and phases end. Whenever you cast an instant or sorcery, add red. When Electro leaves the battlefield, you may pay X where, when you do, he deals X damage to target player.
It's fair VV. I mean, it's VV at home. It's still very good, but it's like VV that doesn't combo with Cauldron.
What if you played it with VV?
And in Spellslinger, yeah, and like the Prowess Shell, yeah. I think you could play both of them, and they'd probably be really good. They actually like, because they kind of do the same thing, right? Every time you cast a spell, they make a mana in different ways, but essentially that's what they both do. And then eventually they both give you damage equal to the number of spells you cast. VV, ping, ping, ping as you do it. This, when it dies or leaves the battlefield, you dump all your mana into it, send it to the face. So they actually work in an oddly similar way. I think VV's stronger, but I still think this is a really good card. I think it's one of the better constructed cards we've seen so far.
Yeah, I think this is better for constructed. It's a more beefed up Leyline Tyrant. I really, really enjoyed Leyline Tyrant, and now they just reduced the cost, and Leyline Tyrant itself didn't give you mana for casting anything, whereas this one will. So I think this card, it also just perfectly captures what Electro is, right? So I think this is, he's just living energy at this point, and I love that. So I think this card is going to be very strong.
Richard, how horrible is this card?
It's too VV.
Tell us how unplayable it is.
Okay, here's the problem. It only gives you red mana. Okay, so true. You got to at least make it to 4 mana, plop this down, and then start chaining 1-drop red spells, of which how many do we have in standard? You know, like the fact that VV can add any colored like makes it so much better, right?
That is a good point. It doesn't work with the blue cantrips the way VV does.
Maybe you can use this in older formats where like you can actually sit there and start chaining rituals into Past in Flames, Underworld Breach, into more rituals, into a tutor, into a win. But in standard, I think restricting it to red mana and being so by 4 mana, you're dead already. You know, like yeah. You're gonna go.
So
it's too
what
slow,
you're
right?
Saying is it's balanced.
Yes.
I mean,
maybe
I think
two black gets a card, but it's balanced, does absolutely nothing, right? It's either broken or does nothing. So, yes, it's balanced, right?
I think compared to like the Izzet Cauldron meta, it just looks a little bit fair. But I think once we're out of that meta, I think this card definitely has possibility being standard playable. And I think it's a really good commander card, too. I play this in basically any Spellslinger deck, I think.
In Commander, I think this
card. In Commander, yeah.
Anything with Past in Flames and Underworld Breach. Right? But then, did you really win with Electro, or did you win with Underworld Breach, Seth? Like, did it really matter what happened before the Breach hit?
I guess that is true.
Kraven, the Hunter. Should I watch the movie, Krim? I have the movie
Please,
in my queue.
Please don't watch that movie. Please don't watch that movie. That movie is so bad.
All right. Another Sinister Six card. 1 black, green. Human warrior villain, 4/3 trample. When a creature an opponent controls with the greatest power among creatures that player controls dies, draw a card and put a +1/+1 counter on Kraven the Hunter.
I think Commander players are going to hate this card.
Wait, what?
This is a Commander that all the Commander says is, like, please kill your opponent's biggest stuff as often as possible. Like, all Krim's horrible edicts that he loves are like, oh, everyone sack the creature with the greatest power. Like, it's the perfect Commander. Like, that's all you do is keep chaining those together and draw three cards and draw three cards and just, like, keep killing stuff. And then eventually, I don't know, win by beating down. At least it grows. At least it grows. So eventually it becomes a Voltron threat that can close out the game. But I think that's in Commander it's going to actually be kind of annoying to play against.
I used to play Shevel from Ikoria.
Yep. Kind of similar.
I would hit the cup and I'm like, well, he looks like Kraven, so this is pretty cool. And then now I have literally Kraven and he's gonna go hard at Commander tables for sure. I can't wait to play this card in Commander.
Yeah, hooray.
Because of those exact reasons, all those edicts, he's gonna pop off, man. It's gonna be crazy. A fun fact in the comics right now, did you know that he's hunting, he's with the Predators, as in the Yatia, like the sci-fi movies. He's helping the Predator, like the Yatias kill the Marvel Universe. He's great.
What about Standard? Is there any world where this could be, okay, again, assuming that, you know, that it's not the Cauldron meta or whatever, that we get to a more normal meta eventually, but, like, could you play this in, like, Golgari midrange? Like, it doesn't seem that bad, right? It's, like, 3 mana. You'd want to kill your opponent's stuff anyway. You're Golgari, so you're going to have tons of, like, decent removal. Is there any way you just, like, play this and try to kill stuff and draw cards with it? Or do you think it's just too slow, too clunky, too fair?
Glissa rotated, right?
Glissa did rotate. Glissa's gone.
Yes.
Yep.
Okay. So if there is a Golgari deck, it is going to focus on killing stuff. But yeah. I'm a little bit worried where maybe power creep, you know what I mean, in like removal might be bad because everything exiles.
That's true, yeah. If you exile it, it doesn't die.
Exactly. So maybe not, actually. I'm trying to think here. Because, yeah, like, shoot the sheriff. There's still things that die. Yeah, okay, never mind. This is sweet in Golgari midrange then, yeah?
But you still have Preacher. You still have Unstoppable Slasher.
Yeah, Preacher's pretty good.
Unstoppable Slasher's nice.
You have Mosswood Dreadknight if you want to draw cards. I feel this is a 3-mana 4/3 look really dumb when it dies. I don't know. We have Golgari decks today, right? Their three drop slot is not lacking. So
yeah, Preacher is really good.
Don't like this, and it's not a good, like, a 2/4 Death Touch blocker is, like, so much better than this 4/3 thing that's gonna die immediately, right? Like, you can't really block on it until you start removing a couple things.
Yeah. And it's hard to, like, play and cast removal in the same turn unless you got, like,
you gotta wait till, like,
5.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Probably more of an annoying Commander card.
Oh, speaking of which, Sandman is a 3-drop in green. So let's see what Sandman does. Shifting Scoundrel, 1 green-green, star. Power and toughness are equal to the number of lands you control. Sandman can't be blocked by creatures with power 2 or less. 5 mana, return this card and target land from your graveyard to the battlefield tapped. Ooh.
I do not know what to make of this card.
That's so much better than Kraven.
This card is sweet.
This is the cheapest version of a creature with power and toughness equal to lands that we've ever seen. Before, it was a Shaya at 5 mana. So we've never seen a 3-mana or even a 4-mana creature with this ability, which makes me wonder if this card
isn't Terravor.
So Terravor lands in the graveyard, I believe.
Oh, you're right.
But yeah, so this is lands you control. But anyway, so Sandman, 3-mana 3/3 essentially, right? If you just play it on curve. But in the late game, especially in a deck that's putting extra lands into play, there's going to be a 3-mana 6/6, a 10/10, and then it can even recur itself. Although it is notable, you have to have a land in the graveyard to activate that. It's not up to one target land. So you got to make sure you have fetches or like self mill or something if you want to get it back. But this card seems like it should be good, right? It's big. You can't chump block it with small creatures. It's got to be good.
I mean, in Commander, yes, I think this will be sweet, right? A huge threat. I think in Standard...
No, I hate this card in Commander. No, it's just a big creature. It doesn't draw me cards.
I mean, okay. Well, there's more than card draw in Commander, but
well,
in
I guess
Standard,
you can sack it to, like, yeah, greater good or something. That'd be sweet.
Yeah, I think you bring it back. But this in Standard, I think my concern is that I don't believe Mono Green exists. Not yet.
And the green that does exist is Land Volley, and this doesn't really work with landfall, I don't think. I guess the graveyard ability kind of puts land into play, but it still doesn't really seem like a Tifa card to me.
It's pretty strong. Remember we have like the question of like, if it's a 3-drop vanilla, how big does it need to be before you think it's playable? I think this will cross that mark, right? Like, it'll probably be like a 3-mana, 5, 6, 7. Maybe you play with overlords. You can like ramp with lands and get it bigger. But like, depends how fast standard is, right? Can you afford to play a 3-mana 3/3 and assume that's like an inconsequential body and then wait 1 or 2 turns before it becomes online? And then at some point you just play like a 3-mana 6/6 or 7/7, assuming you're actually going big on mana. Then that's like hyper efficient, and then it also brings itself back from the dead. So if there's a shell, there's a way. Also can't be chump block, which I think is kind of relevant, right? Like that 2 or less clause is like actually relevant. I think this is playable. I think there could be a world where there's a deck and you actually put this in non-ironically, and then it actually does work. I think that
and you get it back from the graveyard once it dies too, which I think that's what really makes me think it's probably good. The fact that it's going to be tough to kill, assuming that you build around it enough to get a land on the graveyard, I think that makes it probably constructed playable. At least gives it a shot.
I mean, it's coming back as a 6/6 minimum, right?
At least,
when you bring it back, right?
With cards like Summon Titan putting lands in the yard, of course, Summon Titan takes the lands and puts it into play, which is also just a positive in general. And like, you also have, what is it, the Saga, Craven's Last Hunt. These are all, there's a lot of self-mill and getting lands into your graveyard. So I'm curious how you do that. Is it in Simic? Is it in, you know, like, I think it'd be a Simic thing.
It could even be like a Golgari self-mill, some sort of root style, like self-mill deck where you're just like filling the graveyard and you're not even planning on like hard casting this. You're just planning on like getting it back from the graveyard and milling it.
Yeah.
All right. Norman Oswald. 2-mana 1/1.
Osborne.
Blue. Sorry, I was getting ready by pulling up the backside. Legendary creature, human scientist, villain. Norman Osborne can't be blocked. When he deals combat damage to a player, he connives, which is draw a card, then discard a card. The discarded card was a non-land card, put a +1/+1 counter. 1 Grixis. So 4-mana. Transform Norman Osborne. Activate only as a sorcery. Backside, 4-mana, 3/3, Grixis, so you can actually just play it for the backside directly if you want. Flying Menace, spells you cast from your graveyard cost 2 less. Goblin Formula, each non-land card in your graveyard has Mayhem. The Mayhem cost is equal to its mana cost. You may cast a card from your graveyard for its Mayhem cost. If you discarded it this turn, timing rules still apply.
Balance Madness.
It is, yeah. It is kind of a twist on Madness, essentially Mayhem. This card's interesting.
I think this card's very good. I think this card is very good. The front side is absolutely wild, right? And then like the backside, I have to play a little bit more, but like at least right now, I really like the front side. Reducing the cost of everything on the backside is nice. Also very cheap, evasive, like attacker. And conniving, filling up your yard is going to pair nicely with another card I want to talk about. But yeah.
I mean, so this card, I'm actually the front side. Don't we have a bunch of versions of this that already exist in Standard that are just like blue 2-drops that when they deal combat damage, you loot or something? Like, isn't there an uncommon rat?
There's a rat.
I feel like I feel like it already exists and no one plays it. So for me, I'm more excited
about it. Connive is different than looting. Right.
I guess that's true because you can potentially grow the creature. Yeah. So I guess it is an upside compared to just straight up looting. You have the downside that it's legendary. So, but I guess you can loot away extra copies. I think the backside, like if you build around it, can be very strong. Like a 2-mana reduction to anything you cast from your graveyard. Not only does that apply to all the Mayhem stuff, which you're going to have a way to like discard your own cards to turn it on, but it also applies to like Flashback, any other mechanic, Aftermath, anything going from the graveyard. So I actually think the backside is a 3-mana 4/4 with flying. It actually seems kind of good to me.
Potentially more, even. Let me see here.
Do you keep the counters when you transform it?
Yeah.
You do, right?
Yes, because this is not exile it, bring it back. This is just transform it. So yes. Which means that potentially the backside could be even stronger with Flying Menace and all the additional stuff. And what I like about all of this mayhem, connive enabling, is that fills up the yard nicely.
What, are you going to behold the Sinister Six, Krem? Get all your creatures back? Is that where we're heading with this?
Yes. And on top of that, I mean, it was officially previewed. If you want to talk about it, we could talk about it. I think Carnage, Crimson Chaos, that got previewed. So because of that, Carnage is 2 and black and red, trample. When it enters, return target creature card with mana value 3 or less from the graveyard to the battlefield. It gains this creature attacks each combat if able. And when this creature deals combat damage to a player, sacrifice it. He's got mayhem of red or black and red, and he's a 4/3. I think Carnage is really good. Reanimating a cheap threat that sits there that you'll fill up the yard with. Conniving means that, Norman Osborn on turn 2, and then swinging connive. Throw away Carnage, cast for the mayhem, right? Bring something back later. Like, I don't know. There's got to be some kind of fun engine there, right?
I feel like Carnage is really good if you can mayhem in it. Although I am a little bit... I do worry.
He's a trampling 4/3 for 2, potentially.
Oh, yeah, yeah. If you mayhem it, just the stats and the trample are really good. Plus, you get another body out of it. I do wonder about the reanimation mode. I have a little bit of a fear that it's a lot worse than people think. Because you have to attack every turn, aren't you just going to reanimate something? And often it's just going to chump attack the next turn and you kind of got no value out of it. So I do worry about that part of it, that the reanimation might not be as good as it looks. But I think it really depends on if you mayhem it. If you mayhem it, I think this card is kind of absurd. If you got to cast it for 4 mana, then I'm kind of like, eh. Like if you're playing it fairly and you're not discarding it and getting into play and cheap, I'm kind of like, yeah, it's probably okay.
I mean, Alesha,
just getting another
exists.
Body is good. Is what else exists? Sorry.
Alesha, the one where if you attack at the end of turn, you can reanimate something power less than whatever. So you can mayhem in, get something, trigger Alesha, get it, after chump attacks, get it back, keep going forever.
We also have a ton of support for this, right? Because you have cards like Tursa that are 3 drops that draw and discard. Yeah. You got Fear of Missing Out. These are cards that can get cards in the graveyard, can discard Carnage for Mayhem, and you can get back with Carnage if they're in your graveyard. So you can already see a shell that could be built around it where it'd be really good.
All right.
You
guys
even
got me.
I've upgraded my Rakdos deck with the Carnage.
Yeah! We made Richard a card. We did it.
Well, we have good.
I just like. I actually. Carnage is one of my favorite characters, and I like the. I don't know what you're calling this. The showcase version of Carnage.
The comic book panel one. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So
yeah.
Nice. I will have to say, there's another card. Don't worry. There's more for your Rakdos deck, and it's a variant of Norman Osborn. It's Ultimate Universe Green Goblin. So Ultimate Green Goblin's 1/2 Rakdos hybrid pips. And it's a goblin villain. At the beginning of your upkeep, discard a card, then create a treasure token. And it itself has mayhem, which is 2 and a Rakdos hybrid pip, and it's a 5/4. This card is good, right? I think this card is, good. It's a huge enabler for whatever mayhem self-discarding you want to do. I mean, I do find it humorous that the mayhem cost is the same, pretty much.
It is basically the same.
It's a 3 mana 5/4.
It's a 3 mana 5/4 one way or the other. You can't get around that. But the one thing that is nice is that it fuels all your stuff for the rest of your game. You get more treasure. And on top of that, it's something you could bring back with Carnage.
I think it's a synergy piece. I don't think, if you're doing Carnage stuff, I think it's very good. Or maybe Monument to Endurance, any sort of shenanigans like that, then I really like it. I don't know if it's quite like Rotting Regisaur, where it's just so good I would play it in just an aggro deck. Without having synergies for discarding, maybe. I guess if you're hellbent. Well, Rotting Registrar was a 7/6, right? For 3.
Right.
This is a 5/4. So I'm not sure the stat line's good enough that I want to just if I can't get value out of discarding the card and I'm just actually going down a card, then I'm not sure that a 5/4 is big enough for me to want to do that. But if I can get value out of discarding because I'm mayhemming or monumenting or whatever, then I think the card's really good. So in the Carnage deck, I think this card's probably really good. And I guess if you're out of cards, right? If you're empty-handed, you're a hellbent aggro deck, you still get to make a treasure, I think, right? It triggers on your upkeep. You have nothing to discard, but you still get the treasure token. So maybe in the aggro it could be fine, too, where you just intentionally get empty-handed and make treasures and have a big body.
Lily under the veil, rotating. Why?
Lily would be Why? So good with Mayhem.
Yeah, how good would Mayhem be with Liliana of the Veil? I don't know what empty-handed payoffs we actually have. Like, I guess fear of missing out draws a card when you're empty-handed. So, like, that's your payoff.
We don't really
have Bob to fill your hand. But I don't know. Three mana Firebolt is playable. But I think it has to be this deck. I don't think it's like Regisaur where you just slot it into a random deck and you're happy with
right,
it.
Right,
right. 5/4 is slightly too small for that. And then you really want the Mayhem ability. So who knows what the meta will be, but maybe you can Carnage, Green Goblin, you know, Mayhem deck. I really wanted a Carnage Venom deck.
It's the first
deck,
thing I'm building. Norman, Osborn, Grixis,
Underplayable Rakdos Venom deck cards? I don't know.
I mean, anyway, I think we better stop it there for today. Oh, no. We've already run a little bit long for today's podcast. The good news is we got another whole week of spoiler season, and we'll have the full set next podcast. So if we missed anything today, we'll delve into it on next week's podcast. No fish mail this week, but Richard, if people want to send them in for the future, how do they go about doing that?
All right, hit us up at MTG Goldfish with the hashtag MTG Twitter or MTG Fishmail, and we'll get to your questions on air.
And that brings us to the end of episode 551 of the MTG Goldfish podcast. So Richard Krim, thanks for hanging out. Thanks to everyone for listening. Thanks to Card Conduit for supporting the show. And we'll be back next week to talk about more Spider-Man spoilers and whatever goes on in the world of Magic. So until then, have a spectacular week, everyone. And this is a crew signing out.